Monster Man, episode 448, Quaggoth to Rat. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're going to be taking a look at a couple more monsters from Monstrous Manual, the 1993 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. But before we do that, it's time to thank some new Patreon backers. Yes, these are people who've gone to patreon.com/monsterman, and they have pledged as little as $1 a month to help support the show. And if, like today's backers, you pledge at the $2 or higher level, you'll also get access to all new episodes of Patron Deities, my other podcast about the myths and religions of the world and how we can find inspiration in them for our fantasy role-playing games. So thank you very much to new patrons ColumboFan69, Gabe McMahon, or McMahon, and Thomas Louth, or possibly Loth. I apologize for mispronouncing people's names, but I wish I could be sure I was getting it right. Once again, thank you all so much for your support. It really means a lot to me. Also, I was the guest on an episode of the podcast This Old Dungeon, and I will drop a link in the show notes if you want to hear me talk about, well, nominally about the Fiendfolio, but honestly about all kinds of things. All right. Our first monster for this episode is the Quaggoth. Now, these come from the Fiendfolio, and the first time I discussed them, I'm not sure that I mentioned that they are clearly based, possibly because I didn't know, on the Saggoths from Edgar Rice Burroughs' Pellucidar novels. Now, if you've only seen the 1976 film, that may not seem obvious to you, but the Saggoths are described as being quite gorilla-like, and indeed I think they have a connection to the gorillas in Tarzan of the Apes. So yeah, in the novels they are ape-like creatures used as muscle by the Mehars, who rule the Hollow Earth realm of Pellucidar. In this case, the role of the Mehars is taken by the Drow, so the Quaggoths are basically muscle for the Drow. The illustration definitely has that kind of caveman vibe, and is much more humanoid than later depictions of Quaggoths would wind up being. They're typically, these days, given kind of a more hunched posture and longer, more sort of ape-like arms, and made to look a little more malevolent. These guys are really just sort of brutes, it looks like, and don't have the kind of cruelty that is in modern depictions of the Quaggoth. And indeed, they're sort of yet another kind of caveman sort of tribe. They've got psionic rather than magical shamans, but they still do things like, you know, have daily rituals before going out to hunt. They eat dead bodies after combat, including their own, although when they're eating one of their own, they first do a brief ritual of kind of whistling to scare away the spirit before they eat the flesh, which I think is a nice little detail. And there's a suggestion that they were once civilized, but have been kind of crushed into a barbaric state, which of course fits with one of my recurring themes. I tend to like fallen civilizations now in a violent or even animalistic state. I don't know why, but I do. I just think they're neat. The Quaggoths are fine. I do like the idea of the Drow as leaders with kind of other creatures doing the muscle. It fits with the sort of conspiratorial structure of the Drow, and it kind of also takes away from their like martial tough guyness, which is maybe the most irritating thing about them. Obviously, this runs the risk of making the Drow structurally too much like Mind Flayers, or vice versa. Next is the Rakshasa. The Rakshasa have got to be one of the very few monsters where you can genuinely have a debate about whether the illustration in the Monster Manual or the illustration in Monsters Manual is better. By which I mean that the illustration here is by Tony DiTerlizzi, and the illustration in the Monster Manual is by Dave Trompier, or possibly Trampier. But the DiTerlizzi illustration, again, has that kind of like spindly quality that's in so much of his work, and it really adds to the kind of storybook quality of the Rakshasa. It really looks like a creature that might be in a fairy tale. As I have said, there's a special episode on Rakshasas, or as I should really say, Rakshasas. The Rakshas is a sort of demonic creature from Indian legend, and the creature of the D&D game is not really very like that. They are just sort of generally demons. In fact, you know, the thing about them being tiger men is really interesting because the entry even says they're just sort of animal folk. They don't particularly look like tigers, but the illustrations have been so iconic that it just kind of winds up that way. I think this is also the first appearance of the backward hands of the Rakshasa. So like their palms point outward from the body, right? That if they were standing with their hands at their side, their thumbs would point toward the back. But if you want the lowdown on the Rakshas in Indian literature, in particular in the great epic, the Ramayana, where the villain Ravana is a Rakshas, indeed the king of the Rakshasas, you can go to the feed and just search for that. Just search for Rakshas and you'll find it. This entry introduces the idea that they have like a system of nobility. Previously, they've mainly been thought of as being quite solitary. And so there are some ranks within the society of the Rakshasas. So there are Rooks, who are kind of knights. Above them are Rajas, and above them are Maharajas. And what this means is that collectively, this nobility makes up over a third of Rakshas society, which it works, I guess, because they are like a purely supernatural being. You know, there's not a real society here. In historical societies, I would find that very implausible. I was just looking at, I'm teaching a Norman conquest unit at present with one of my students. And, you know, we were looking at some population figures, which showed that there were about a couple of thousand knights and proportionally much, much smaller numbers of high-ranking nobility, with an inner circle around the king of really no more than a dozen or so very large landholders in late 11th century England, with a population of probably 1 to 2 million people, although it's hard to be precise. So the proportion of the nobility in a society is typically very small, but these are a fantasy society, so whatever. Does kind of weaken the term Maharaja, though. And then finally, we have the rat. These are rats. You may be familiar with them. We've got the brush rat, which is basically a kind of lovable pack rat. We've got the regular old rat, comma, giant, which is such a sort of staple of fantasy adventure. I wonder if this creature is such a staple of fantasy adventure that you actually can't really get away with it effectively very much anymore. Like, you'd need to think of new situations in which to deploy it to really make it work. And I actually think that's kind of a shame, because the giant rat, like, has sort of squandered some of its goodwill by basically being the low-level target practice monster in so many video games and things. But actually, the idea of fighting a giant rat is genuinely horrible. And I think if you put enough effort into the description, it might really work. You know, if I'm some zero-level halfling in a funnel, making my way through the sewer, desperately trying to keep my mouth and nose above the surface of the liquid, I dare not call it water, with my dagger in one hand, and I see a giant rat perched on the edge of the sewer channel looking at me with its beady, malevolent eyes, and I'm like, ah, in a minute, this thing's going to be biting my hand while I stab it in the belly. That's actually a pretty horrifying image. You would not like to die being bitten to death by a giant rat. Like, that's a pretty gross way to go. But somehow the horror of it has kind of been lost, and it's just, I don't know, it's not that exciting anymore. And finally, we have the Ozquip, which is not particularly a rat, but it's sort of rat-like. It fulfills a rat-like role, and it's capable of burrowing through stone and things. And it's fine. It's a good monster. Like, again, it's not super useful, but it's sort of a, I don't know, it's a very weird creature, and I like the occasional weird creature in an otherwise naturalistic dungeon, just as a kind of not in Kansas anymore reminder. I do not mean any disrespect to the Ozquip when I say that this is about as much Ozquip as I like to have in things. This is a good amount of Ozquip. All right, that is about all the monsters that we have time for today. I have a very busy week this week, and I think there may not be a special episode at the end of the week, just a regular episode, but I think you're going to enjoy it anyway, so I hope that you will join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.